And then we'll get going. So this is not, you're not on Good Morning America. So we'll just, we'll be very relaxed and it's not Gotcha Media. So we're, this is to make you look good and the college look good. And there's not much you can do to make me look good. So, all right, we'll do it in about 5 seconds. Okay. And welcome to another edition of Zoomed In. I'm your host, Brandon Chapman, and it's my pleasure to be joined by Joe Crandall, who is now like a superstar or rock star or something because she's been on television. Yeah. Joe was our finalist for the College of Education as our 3-minute thesis winner. And so she was able to compete in the university 3-minute thesis, which was on Northwest Public Broadcasting this year. So hence the TV star. Joe, thank you so much for joining me. And let's just talk about 3-minute thesis first. For those who don't know, 3-minute thesis is a competition for doctoral students, and you get 3 minutes and not a second more, they say, to talk about your research. So you've obviously been around the college for a while and you've seen the 3-minute thesis. What made you jump on 3-minute thesis this time?
Well, yeah. And I, each year, this is my third year here. Each year I've come up and I've asked you about it and made tentative moves that I was going to do it. But I think that I jumped in this time because I really understood the heartbeat of my own research program this time.
Okay.
Everybody who I've heard advocate for participating has talked about it as a way to really become a person who can better communicate your research to just the humans around you, not as expert to expert, but just talk about something that's meaningful to you, to others in a way that's meaningful to them. And I was finally really ready to do that just because I'd peeled away the layers of the research that weren't my real focus right now, because you can't condense something that's too broad into 3 minutes anyway. So it was the right time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And when you first contacted me this year, I was like, yeah, right, she's not actually going to do it. by the way, for those who are curious, as the College of Education winner, again, of course, you got to represent the college at the university event, but as a College of Education winner, you also got $750 cash. So minus taxes, of course, or whatever, but $750 is the winner. So I'm sure that was probably useful, you know, which is great. But yeah, let's take a look and we'll just watch your 3-minute thesis here. And then I'll come back with a few more questions. All right, this is where we pause and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So there you have it. And Joe, you talked about being able to communicate your research. There's no question that in a field of really good competitors for the college, you won this year because that was done very well in terms of being able to communicate your research in a way that even I can understand. So good job, first of all. Really good job. So let's talk about that research a little more in depth. Where, you know, I'm not suggesting we talk for 30 minutes, but I'd love to talk for more than 3 minutes. So, sure. Where did this idea come from for your research? Obviously, it was founded in something. There was something that you noticed that you said, "Hey, here's an issue. Let's examine it further."
Sure. Well, I think the root of my whole research program comes out of the fact that I'm a little bit of a nerd, a little bit of a hacker. And so when I first started in my first year, I was very much focused on math students computing, computers, computers, computers. I was very intent on this because it's something that I had only recently in my own career as a mathematician come to realize the power of. And so I was really attuned to this. And it took a couple of years for my advisor to talk me down a little bit from how broad I was looking at this. And I'm no longer just focused on that. But in the interim, over the first couple of years in my program, I have spoken to math teachers. So all at the undergraduate level, I've spoken to engineering teachers in multiple engineering disciplines. And I have heard every variation on this. I have heard the undergraduate math teachers say the math that we're teaching them right now is the only thing they're ever going to need in engineering. I always bring back to engineers that as long as they understand this, they'll be fine. I've heard math teachers say that, well, we're teaching them this math, but it's not what they're going to need. I've heard engineering instructors say, yeah, as long as they learn that math when they come here, they'll be fine. And I've heard engineering instructors say the math that they're being taught is not the right math. I've heard, so every variation from every disciplinary perspective on whether students are receiving the mathematical tools they need, especially for engineering students, for when boots hit the ground, when they actually need to solve real world problems. And so this became more and more intriguing to me that I was hearing these conflicting ideas about how well, and this is where some of my actual research words come in, but this idea of transfer, how well does the use of math as a tool transfer into real world problem solving? So hearing all those really conflicting perspectives from both sides of the street, I think is what sparked it in the first place.
Yeah. And you have this background in applied mathematics. I look back when I was in school. So I was a communications major, and there are a lot of jokes. We make jokes about going into communications because we weren't good at math. But I think a lot of that stems from the fact that when I was in school, it was not that I was terrible at math. Math just wasn't wasn't my favorite thing. But I would make comments about why would you need to go into math or major in math unless you wanted to be a math teacher? You know, so funny. And here's the thing. Nobody corrected me on that. You know, none of my math teachers actually said, actually, let me tell you what you could do with this, and really connected the dots for me. And so I didn't really see that value. And so that was difficult. And so you talk about the different ideas that some math teachers, some math folks will talk about. And there's actually that other option where sometimes there's just some wild ideas out there about it's totally not useful at all. And hello, I would have loved if somebody would have said, yes, let's show you the applications for this.
Interestingly, I actually am remembering, as you're talking about that, an experience that I had when I was an undergrad. So I was
like 5 years ago, you know.
Yeah, just a little while ago.
So young, yeah.
Well, I was actually a non-traditional student, so I was an older undergrad than most. But as an undergrad, I remember sitting in, and it was actually in my differential equations class, which is the math class that I'm most focused on right now. And I had been given an assignment to go and actually, I had to choose from among some actual research that was being done, where these different math applications were being used. And I remember having an epiphany. So at the time, I remember actually thinking this. I can't believe I thought this, but I remember actually thinking, well, I really love doing math, but I really also like celestial mechanics, astrophysics. You know, I wish I could do both. I remember thinking that I had to choose to do math and that I couldn't be a person who does math in another field. That was how siloed my own perspective of what it meant to do math was, that you have to be locked in a room writing equations, right? I still, as a math major, didn't understand what it could mean in the world to do math. And that assignment, though, that actually had us go out and become engaged with not solved problems, sticky problems, where math was actually being used in that boots at the ground method that I mentioned, opened my eyes. I had this epiphany, like, wait a minute, I could do math, but it could be working on the celestial mechanics over here, right? And it just completely opened my eyes. And then that computing piece, when I first learned any sort of computing programming, it was because I was forced to. They wouldn't graduate me unless I learned just a little bit. And as soon as that came into my life, it even further opened a window on the possibilities of applying math. And all of that points to the difference in that mindset of, so when you talk about associating being good at math with just, that's because I'm going to teach math, I'm going to be a math teacher. It's closely paralleled by this need to switch from learning math as a subject to learning math as a tool. Mm-hmm. Which is really all those professors that I talk to talking about, do they have the right tool?
Yeah, you mentioned celestial, and of course, as a communications person, the first thing I'm trying to do is come up with a funny pun about how the research you're doing, you know, the ramifications, the sky is the limit, you know.
Nicely done. So, yes.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to distract me, Joe. So in terms of tool, and that was very apparent in your presentation with 3-minute thesis. I thought it was brilliant, but you know, since I've paid a little more attention through our math and science education, I've noticed a lot of other tools that have been used. And so I'm going to pull something here from the summary of the research, where you talked about goals of reform efforts such as inquiry-based instruction, mathematical modeling, and computational tool inclusion to make differential equation knowledge and methods more transferable to application. See, this was also, by the way, not written by a communications person. It's pretty long. I've seen a lot of really cool stuff on things like argument-based or inquiry-based mm-hmm. instruction. And so how does, you know, your research not negate some of the efforts being done, but maybe help amplify or even aid some of those other tools that that our great researchers are doing at the College mm-hmm. of Education?
Absolutely. I really, the more that I talk to both the math and engineering instructors and the engineering students who are finding out how math fits into their actual engineering work, the more I'm coming around to this notion that authorship of the knowledge, that being contributing to the construction of the knowledge, right, through problem-based learning, through processes of inquiry, is the key to that transferability that we're trying to get a hold of. So for instance, students in a math course, for one thing, research shows over and over again that we teach the way we were taught, right? So there are certain systems of teaching, ways of teaching, resources for teaching, choice of textbook. There are teachers who use the textbook they use because it's the one that was used when they learned the course, not because they have vetted 20 textbooks. This happens. And so, so a lot of times, depending on how they were taught, and that's just kind of being proliferated, students may not have a part in constructing the knowledge at all. It may just be something that is transmitted or attempting to be transmitted, which we know is impossible. No matter how well I understand something, no matter how the intricacies and the nuances of which I have mastery, I am unable to transmit my understanding to you. It's just not possible. So the only way I can get you to have the same type of nuanced understanding, ownership of this, is to actually struggle with a problem that leads to the realization of that concept, the mastery of that tool. And so I really think that what I'm doing, and there is actually a piece, it's not the top level piece, but there is a piece that specifically is looking at evidence of whether students are involved in inquiry processes along their undergraduate math trajectory on the way to engineering. And then once they get to engineering, you know, are they involved in inquiry? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. Again, there are many professors who teach the way they were taught, and if that didn't involve student inquiry, then that's what continues.
Yeah, not only professors, I guess, which is a term we normally use in higher education, but any math teacher all the way down to K-12 type stuff. I see these, like, on social media, I see these little funny memes, and then other things that folks of a perhaps older generation put out there to push back on newer concepts in math, which aren't necessarily concepts. It's just a way of teaching, and it kind of lines up with this. Well, this is the way I taught, and everything was fine. You know, what do they need all this new age stuff? And I can't help but think there's an irony in that. Well, obviously, maybe you feel like it worked for you, but obviously it didn't work. Like, there's something here when we see that there was a mastery problem, right? Our students weren't grasping math, and certainly not how to apply that math anyway. So, you know, it's kind of weird that that we're kind of constrained by ourselves. Like we put these constraints on, well, this was the way we were taught. And yet obviously there's a need for something, right? To have a more complex, a deeper understanding of mathematics and how it's used. And even outside of this idea of just the math classroom, like what the ramifications are, the sky's the limit, as we said. So, anything else that you'd like, because you've got an open mic, anything else that you would like to talk about? And then I'd also love to find out, when you get your PhD, when you're done, what do you plan to do?
I'll just say one more comment that kind of dovetails right with what you observed, that different people say, well, what is the impetus for me to change because it worked for me, right? And so what is the metric that ultimately decides whether something worked or not? And one of the things that my research platform will ultimately launch into more is not just moving from, okay, we're moving from high school to college. Okay, we're moving from undergraduate mathematics right. to undergraduate engineering, but we're moving from our entire degree program out into the world, out into industry. That is the ultimate metric as far as if that combination of math engineering, learning how to learn, learning how to problem solve, has it been successful? That's when we really can tell. And so as I lay the groundwork here, later on, I'll be looking at consequences in industry of these changes that are made in academia.
Yeah. And question two was, what do you plan to do when you were done? Anything specific? I know you probably have goals of what you'd like to do, but
yes, I have.
You want to work in higher ed? You want to work in, I mean, what's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually, I very much, my first choice is to continue working in higher ed. I want teaching math to be part of what I do. It's just that there's nothing more fun, really. I have a little bit of jealousy as I'm talking to these different people who are teaching the classes that, you know, I miss being directly involved with some of those classes, and I want to roll up my sleeves and teach some math. And so teaching is going to be definitely part of what I do, just because it's something that makes me happy. And teaching mathematics, especially, is something that's one of my fortes. But also being involved with helping students work with some of those real world projects. So as I said, I have a foot in computing. I have a foot in mathematics. I have I'm going to just generate more feet here. I have a foot in the actual educational research portion. And so there's a lot of flexibility in the ways that I can be involved both with the instructors and with the students in the learning process, in studying the outcomes of the learning process. So I'm being involved, but because of the particular skills that I have, there's also opportunities to collaborate with people who are outside of academia, people who are starting to look at the engineers who are entering industry, the reteaching that may or may not be happening as they enter industry, things like that. And then finally, here's my curveball. I also am an author. I'm a writer. And so I'd like to work on some fiction writing that just kind of also draws on my nerdy resources that are always floating in the background there. So yeah, there's a lot of things. I have a lot of goals.
That sounds awesome. I here's the thing. I don't read as much fiction as I probably should to be happy in life. All these books behind me are all nonfiction, and most of them are baseball related. So you had me with the curveball reference there. Of course, this is just how I am, Joe. You talked about all the feet that you got, and I was already thinking, oh, we got to have somebody with anatomy and physiology take a look at this as their research. This lady has got 10 feet. It's weird. I would take a class from you. I think if you can teach the way that you present for a 3-minute thesis, I think you get it, because folks being able to understand these concepts is just so valuable. And I think you've done a great job. I've enjoyed seeing, bits and pieces here and there with you at WSU. And of course, as I update things like the website for the math and science education program, I see some of the highlights. But I'm super pleased that this year was the year you came in, you did it, you won the 3-minute thesis, and that's not the end. Of course, you're still rolling, with this good stuff. So, Congratulations on 3MT, but I would say in advance, congratulations for all the changes that and the progress that I think you're going to make within the field. So huge kudos for that. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
All right, cool. Joe Crandall, one of our phenomenal PhD students, PhD candidate. Thank you for joining me on Zoomed In, and go Cougs.
Yep. Thanks. It was fun.
And cut. That was awesome. Thanks, Joe. I'll probably have that. Let's see. Today's Thursday. So it'll probably be out tomorrow mid morning.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll just put it out there we'll do all the social media and then the website and send it out.
This has gotten, it's been really interesting to watch this evolve, how you've kind of tweaked it and developed the rhythm of it and everything. It's a cool spot.
Yeah. So, yeah. It was one of these that was born out of necessity.
Right.
The podcast, right. You wouldn't think that it takes very much equipment, but there kind of is a funny setup where here, I mean, I could do this like a podcast and just take the audio, but I thought, hey, we're all on Zoom anyway, so let's just do something with it. I think this will continue, actually. So
very cool.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate
it. Awesome.
Yep,
talk to you later.